The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
It's time for the Culture Club. Moncon McGann is with us. It's been so long since we've seen Moncon. Delighted to see you here in the studio. Author of a new book called 32 Words for Field. What? Explain that to me.
Yeah, so what I wanted to write a book that looked at the Irish language from all the different perspectives that we don't normally look at it from. So, you know, so often we just think, oh, this language is, it's taught badly, or it was beaten into me in school, or the government is doing this or that wrong. And I thought, wait there, this happens to be an ancient language that has been spoken on this island for like at least 2,000 years, but possibly like 2.5 or even maybe in some form of it 3,000 years ago. So if you have a language that's that old, that is that old, and you know, there's no European language that's that old, you're back to the languages like Sanskrit or Hebrew or Istrangelo, these languages that gave us a perspective on the world that was like pre-modern, that was truly ancient. And the Irish language happens to be this type of language. It has these words that refer not only to farming things or nature, but actually you can look, some of the words, they seem to suggest the very beginnings of geological time. I'll give you an example or two, but like, you know, the way an Aboriginal language will sort of refer back to these sort of folk memories. So like there's a word, Town Cliona, the wave of Cliona. It's a wave that appears in down in West Cork. There's also a similar wave up in Derry. And so in some certain storms, so folklore commissions, anyone who speaks Irish, Town Cliona means particularly stormy weather, referring to this angry wave, which was when Manannan, the sea god, came out of his of the other world, sent a wave to kill Cliona, a goddess, a divine being, to try and kill her. And so she now, because she's immortal, because she's also divine, she lives under the rocks down in West Cork, and she comes out and roars. Okay. Now there's a similar wave, Town Ruia and Town Tuia up in Northern Ireland. And what geologists now believe is that after the last ice age, okay, 12,000 years ago, the water was flooding north up to Scotland and up to Iceland and, you know, the North Pole, was gushing off the land. And it was leaving these torrents of water coming out. And that was exactly when the first settlers were coming in. And they saw these waves. So the exact areas where Town Tuia, Town Cliona and Town Ruria are where those massive gushes of the last glaciers were washing out. Like, when I heard that, I thought, I need to write a book that, God, so somehow folk memories from 10,000 years ago, from a people, our first settlers, who weren't speaking Irish, didn't have the same DNA as us, is still alive. That bowled me over. And I thought, I want to collect all those weird concepts and put them
together. And despite the way we teach it and despite the negativity towards the language, it still survives.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And sort of, it's so hard when you have a language that is so comfortable with the other world, and particularly with, like, it's a pre-electricity country. It's a language. It's a language that comes from before we accepted this rational, objective, controlled world, you know, that everything was made of molecules and atoms. It's a world where, you know, other worlds could come into yours. Like the word counter. Counter means district or region or place. But there was also the opposite to counter. Counter and alter. And both had equal merit. Alter was the other world. And there were always these people who could go from counter to altar. So like Pukin is a supernatural being that appears invisible in our world. So these people who could go from one to the other. And I thought, yeah, somehow we've managed to keep this language that also has words for microphone and for computer and all, but we'll have word for all those lights that appear at night in magical places. Like Leaspawn, which is the magical lights that appear when you drift a bit too close to the other dimension.
And before we get to your Culture Club selections, the title, 32 Words for Field, give us some of the words and explain the rationale behind them.
Okay, I won't give you the whole 32. Well, so there's Taunach. Taunach is an arable field in an arid area. There's Raon, which is an upland field. There's Bánóg, which is Bánóg, a field for games or dancing. There is Lusset, a neat, well-arranged field. There's Min, this is a smooth field. My favourite words are fields like words like Budon. Budon is a field where gorse or firs were growing, and that they were then removed with a scythe or a sickle. But let's say you had an upland field that had gorse or firs in it, and they were removed, but not with a sickle, but by being burnt. That'd be a Luscon. Like, I go on. There's like Machara, there's Mánair, an enclosed field. There's Cluain, which is a meadow field between two woodlands. There's basically, for people for whom everything was about surviving on the land, you know, it was really important to be able to immediately discern a bit of land and know what was this good for, what happened here.
Okay, well, I'm going to start Culture Club by asking about a favourite book or author, because I think there might be a slight link to what you've written about.
Yeah, so there's like, a lot of my sort of favourites are old things, but this one, there's a new book coming out called Thin Places. And so Ireland didn't have much nature writing. I don't know, you know, you think of the English, the great English writers who were like devoted to nature. We had like Prager, Richard Lloyd Prager in the, you know, 100 years ago, and then Tim Robinson, the great Tim Robinson.
Who died only recently.
Exactly, yeah. But there's a new woman, Kerry Ní Dochtarigh. So she's from Derry, and she was brought up in the Troubles in Derry, but also sort of in a difficult enough family situation. And a bit like Kes, you remember the movie in the north of England where the young boy's life was made whole by his kind of relationship with a Kestrel. It's a bit like that. Kerry Ní Dochtarigh escaped from the anger and claustrophobia of both Derry life and the Troubles and her own sort of inner family turmoil by devoting herself to nature. And last year she wrote this book, and I've just seen extracts of it, and there was this bidding war with like six different publishers demanding to get it. So it's coming, because of COVID it's being delayed, so it's coming out in the springtime by Canongate. It's called Thin Places, and you know Thin Places is this Celtic concept that there were places in the Irish landscape that were thin, that were easy to meld into the other world. And the way that she makes you see the Midlands or a river or just an early morning through whole new eyes, really, it just touches you. At least it's got to me. In the middle of COVID, it was what gave me hope.
Okay. Do you read a lot?
I do, yeah. Yeah, I read too much, if anything.
Of what sort of things?
I want every book I read to nourish me in some way. So I'm not reading, you know, really dark stuff. I'm not reading politics if it gets too grim. I want something that's going to give me another glimpse on the world. So it's architecture, music, something going to make me think wider about the world.
All non-fiction though, isn't it?
No, if I find a great novel that is happening to do that at the same time, that's the best of all.
Okay, let's move to music. We ask every contributor to the Culture Club, and as Moncon McGann was with us this week, to nominate the first piece of music that they can admit to or remember buying. For depending on the age, it might be a single. What's your first piece of music?
Yeah, it was 1982 or maybe 83, and it was Nina's 99 Red Balloon or Rote Ballonen. And I got it, and I was so delighted. You know, it came, she sung in English on the A side, and then the B side, it was the original version, which was actually a different title of the song, 99 Luftballonen auf ihrem Weg zum Horizonten or something. And I remember the thing 12 thinking I was so sophisticated, I had this, and went into school, and they just laughed at me.
We'll play it. We have it to listen to.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant.
It's harsher sounding, isn't it, than the English language version that we all know.
I remember at the time thinking, and I still do, that it's slightly sexier too. Like.
Still do, fair play. Okay, favourite album or band? Who have you gone for?
Yeah, that's sort of dating me. It's Sigur Rós. Like, I should have summoned more up to date. Like, they did some magical things a long time ago in the 90s and haven't done much since. But and it's that first album that really hit home, the Aegitis Bryun or whatever. I've recently built a man cave, like we're meant to do at this age, you know, the cabin in the bottom of the woods where I go back to. And I just put on my speakers and I play tracks. And I'm realizing it's actually, you know, obviously we know Iceland is still all totally connected with that fairies and the earth and the elementalness. And when I listen back to their songs, and particularly when I decipher them, when I get translated, they were doing the same thing. They were saying, we live in this elemental land that has all of this folklore attached to it.
Okay, you have a particular track as well that you've picked out for us.
Yeah, yeah, from that album, from Aegitis Bryun, Starlaufur. And again, I just thought it was lovely because it's got these sort of beautiful strings and this sort of plucking guitar with it, this almost palindromic sort of violins in the background. But when I translated it, it's about this when you go to sleep and this sort of otherworldly comes at you. So it's like I hide my head under the covers. A little elf stares at me, runs towards me, but doesn't move from the place. And then she or he wakes up in the morning and everything's the same, except all the walls are gone. And that's just like as I was saying, that counter alter, that this world and the other world. And there's a word in Irish called skim, which is in my book. And skim means a tiny speck of dust. OK, but it also means a subatomic particle, and it means whitewash on a wall, and it means dust on a mantelpiece. But a generation ago...
Same word means all those different
all
things.
All those things, yeah. And a generation ago, skim had other meanings that used to be in the dictionaries and aren't in the modern dictionaries. Skim meant a fairy film that covered the land. So you know in that early morning where it looks like the world mightn't be quite real. And it also means succumbing to the other world through sleep. That's beautiful. Skim, succumbing to the other world through sleep. And that's exactly what I think Sigur Rós is getting at in that.
Let's hear it. Okay, best gig you were ever at?
It would have been something in either the Underground on Dame Street or probably the Bag It In, and it would have been the Stars of Heaven. So when I was like 16, 17, 18 in the late 80s, the Stars of Heaven were the most important band. It was them and Something Happens were the band that everyone was talking about. But of course, we hated Something Happens because you were either one or the other, do you know?
So I mean, it was a sort of the blurring oasis of its time for Dublin, yeah. Is it?
And they were both best friends with each other. And in fact, the Stars of Heaven and Something Happens, when they disbanded, formed a new group called The Revenants with members from both. So they were friendly, but as teenagers, you had to love or hate one. So we sometimes go to sometimes, but Stars of Heaven weren't quite as famous, but God, they were sort of a mix between The Byrds and Graham Parsons with a little bit of the Velvet Undergrounds. And they were so good because we were all underage. So Jeff in the Underground in Dame Street wouldn't allow, you know, us into the gigs. And the Stars would say to us, they wouldn't start unless we were allowed in. So every time John Peel did a session with them, and Dave Fanning did, I think, two sessions. And every time we were trying to be in RT when Dave Fanning was recorded, or when the tapes were leaked out to us, it was life or death for us to hear every track of their two albums. They had Sacred Heart Hotel and then Speak Slowly.
Just two albums. That's all they lasted for.
That was good for Dublin bands in the '80s, even having one album, and one of those was an EP. The first one was very short.
We actually have some Stars of Heaven live.
Brilliant.
I can hear the highlight through what we're in. With every other word throw me away. Oh, you get by every other day. The cake that I placed there, the one the princess called the wolf and sailors called the spare. A winding sheet that bound us as a bandage binds a wound. A cloak of darkness stitched with stars that let us lie in mirror. Any other girl will find a fear. I can hear the high life through our weary.
So how do the Stars of Heaven sound to you now?
You can't know emotionally the impact that's still having me. I'm like right back in the Bag It In with my Blackberry and vodka glass and moshing over the monitors, jumping up and down, and then pushing someone behind me, someone from Sharkbait, which was the really tough ska band at the time. And I'm saying, sorry. So clearly the recordings, like my microphones and recording quality have improved a lot, but the vibrancy of that still hits home to me.
Okay, we've done music and books, so let's move on. Movies, are you a big movie watcher?
I was, and I, like, to be fair, all of these are so old, you know, they're all from decades ago. I now spend my time just growing my vegetables, my potatoes, my chard, and my garden. I've lived such a boring life. But yeah,
because you're not traveling, like you've traveled so much, and now you can't.
Exactly. Yeah. So in, I think in February I announced that I was going to never fly again. That I was giving up flying for environmental reasons.
You but just got in ahead of COVID-19 yeah. before it stopped you, anyway.
Yeah, but I had such great plans. This whole year was going to be spent doing trains all over Europe. I was going to try and get a train, a ferry up to Iceland, train to Bosnia. So yeah, I'm just at home growing my veg now.
Okay, how's that for you?
Really good, to be fair. It's all I wanted to. I'm just getting old, you know.
Do you not miss the travel?
I mean, when I announced with all excitement in February, I'm giving up travel, and I was so full of my own moral integrity that I didn't really think about the impact. Now that I think, God, that means I said if there was an important like job that I needed to go to America for, but I'm not going to travel to promote holidays or for holiday for myself. So yeah, I am beginning to regret it and to realise what the ramifications of that are.
And would you ever fly again now?
No, not. I mean, I can't. No, not
what
for...
What do you mean you can't?
Well, now that I've announced it, I can't, which was really good that I made it public because otherwise I'd be sneaking. So as I say, if there was a job in London, in America, you know, I might fly over to do that job. But no, I won't fly on holidays again. I mean,
what's your issue with flying?
It's, you know, it's just... Well, particularly if I promote flights on the radio, okay?
Yeah.
So it's not for me to tell other people not to fly. But if I've spent the last whatever... I started promoting flights with you in 2008, like, you know... let's say if I look back in 10 years' time and realise that what I know that I know now, and I continue to tell people, fly around the world when we know the harm it's doing in terms of carbon release. So I'm hoping with about 6 or 7 years, there should be sort of some type of solar short flights within Europe and I can start again. But for the moment, I really love trains. So like in January, this is the first year, every year for the last 20 years I've escaped to somewhere warm. So this January, I just took trains down to the Costa del Sol. And it was gorgeous. It was lovely getting down there. The 3-day trip home was a bit of a pain.
Yes, we moved off movies. Nominate your favourite movie for us, please.
Yeah, okay. Les Amants de Pont-Neuf, a movie that came out in 1991. And again, I remember seeing it in the old screen cinema. And again, you feel so sophisticated at that age. I was, whatever, 90, I was 21. You know, by watching a French movie, but it had Juliette Binoche, which at the time, you know, everyone adored Juliette Binoche, we still do. And then there's Denis Levant. And they're two sort of homeless people living on the streets in Paris, mainly on the Pont Neuf, is that the bridge where everyone locks their locks to in America, or in Paris, puts the padlock, it's the bridge of love. And she is this artist, this troubled artist who she's going slowly blind. And he is this homeless bloke who is a circus acrobat and addicted to drink and to uppers or something. And they fall madly in love. And it's about the harsh life of these people homeless on the streets, but so romantic because he's the first person she's the first person to fall in love with him, and she wants to keep him on the streets. And it's just so romantic. And it ends up, they film some of the scenes. The director is Leo Carax, and they film some of the scenes at the time of the French Bicentennial in 1989.
So we finally discovered it's the English words you struggle with.
Yeah, so the whole sky erupts in fireworks. It is absolutely staggering. You've never seen Paris look so romantic, so beautiful. It would take your heart away.
We weren't able to find a clip of it, although apparently it is available to watch on YouTube. The name of it again?
It's called Les Amants de Pont-Neuf. In other words, I suppose the lovers of the new bridge.
Okay. Yeah. Favourite play or musical or theatre show? What have you gone for?
That's slightly more recent. That's a play that came out, or sort of a dance theatre piece that came out about 2 or 3 years ago called Loch na Halla, or Swan Lake. It was basically an Irish version of Swan Lake, but transcribed to the Irish Midlands. And instead of Tchaikovsky's score, they used like new music from Slow Moving Clouds, this sort of semi half Irish Nordic folk band. And they played live on stage, and then there was like 13... like top quality contemporary dancers. And it told the story of Swan Lake, but instead there were four swans that had been women who had been cast into swans by this evil priest who was Michael Murphy, the great actor Michael Murphy. The show starts with him tied utterly naked, well, just wearing sort of an old pair of saggy underwear, tied to a brick on the stage, bleating like a goat or a lamb. And he's running around this thing, and it turns out he then turns out into this priest who abuses one of the girls, and then he turns out into a really evil sort of Midlands Longford councillor, sort of county councillor, and then into a guard. And basically the demons of old Ireland, and they curse the beautiful young women and they turn them into swans, a bit like the children of Lear. And it's just, it shows the impact, the power of those old myths, those timeless old legends, how we can use them to talk about the real dark stuff of Ireland today.
What's it called?
It's called Loch na Halla, you know, the Lake of the Swans in Irish, by the company is called Tocht Ausa. And it started in Dublin Theatre Festival Ireland, then toured all over the world, went to Sydney Operas, went to Paris and Hong Kong and places. And hopefully if there's a time after COVID where people can gather, a lot of people can gather in theatres again, it might come back.
When we talk about television in the Culture Club, we look for now and then. Go back to then. Influence as a child. What did you like on television?
My most important TV series that I would never miss was Chips. Chips, like, what is it? Californian Highway Patrol. And still, when I hear that soundtrack. So this was Frank Ponciarello, the sort of, played by the actor Eric Estrada, who was sort of the slightly cheeky American Californian Highway Patrol guy. And his sidekick was Jonathan... I can't remember what his surname was.
Baker.
Jonathan Baker, exactly. And basically every single story, the beautiful blue, Californian skies, and they look so cool on their shiny motorbikes. And me at the age of whatever, 8, 9, 10, 11, just thought this was the coolest thing ever. And they would save the day. They would rescue the poor damaged woman or the difficulty and restore order again. Like, it's so hilarious what we know now about highway patrol officers in America. But back then, they were my heroes.
We have a clip from it.
Great.
Is that a gun underneath the seat?
Yeah, it's mine.
What about that? That a shotgun?
No, it's a riot gun.
For what?
For riots. Officer, that has no business being here. My wife carries it to her dinner parties. I guess she forgot it. She's always doing that.
That's your dinner party gun?
No, that's my wife's dinner party gun.
Got any others?
Oh, sure, in the trunk.
Want to step back here, please?
Hey, listen, I'm a solid citizen. I'm with you guys. I mean, officers.
Why do you need a gun in the trunk?
Simple. Day I come home late one night, get mugged, beaten, thrown in the trunk. No, listen, it happened to a friend of mine. Not me, I'm ready.
You got permits for any of these?
Well, I had them registered when I bought them.
Registration is a condition of purchase. You need a permit to transport concealed weapons.
Hey, just hold it. I'm entitled to protect myself.
With 5 loaded guns?
6. 5 handguns and a shotgun.
Where's the other gun?
At home in the shower.
You have a shower gun?
Yeah.
What could happen to you in the shower?
What could... Didn't you guys see the movie Psycho?
Oh, what great commentary on America. Okay. Television, of course, you're a TV documentary presenter. So I presume you watch a lot of television, do you?
I do, yeah. Actually, I don't at all, to be honest. I know what I'm saying, talking about. I used to. I've been living alone since whatever, I was 22, and I've never had a TV since then. Just because, I don't know, I find the grammar, I'm just so aware of how they're being made and the editing and all those ridiculous cliche things that I still do in every programme. I have a series at the moment on TG Carrick about ancient DNA, and I do those same things. You drive, and when you're driving, you talk to the camera, or you do the thing, you know, the camera goes and you talk, you walk towards the camera slowly, you explain thing with your hands waving. We have those same cliched ideas, and I can't watch television without seeing all those. I mean, you know, the whole world has changed in the last 20 years, but we are using the exact same grammar and formats in television making. So it does my head in. TV drama has obviously been revolutionised in the last few years.
And you do watch some stuff online, don't you?
I do, so exactly, online, yeah. The thing that really made an impact a few years ago was Weeds with Mary Louise Parker.
Who also featured in The West Wing prominently.
Exactly, yes. yeah, that's right. Every time she'd appear in The West Wing, you'd think, God, who is this actor? And I'd look her up again. She was so powerful from that. So I think that was one of the reasons that won me towards Weeds. And Weeds was written by Genji Cohen, and it was basically... Genji Cohen. It was so believable. It was this mom, this classic mom, who suddenly didn't have enough money to make her rent and to look after her two boys. So she just started selling pot, selling weed. And it it was absolutely believable why she would have done it in California at the time. And then, of course, if you start becoming a drug dealer, you just get into all sorts of trouble. So it was comedy, but it's really dark comedy. And just looking at that whole clickety-clack suburban America and sort of the, you know, the football club and the mom club, and how she was in this world, this very suburban mom club, but also then a sort of a major drug dealer.
Let's hear a clip from the trailer.
I'm getting high right now. You can't even tell.
Marijuana currently exists in a legal gray area. It's not illegal to have weed, but it's illegal to buy it.
What's your story?
I have two boys.
You got a man?
He died of a heart attack. It must be so hard for you being all alone.
You got a house, bills, you need some help.
What's your business?
I own a bakery.
Smart cover.
You just have to make it look like you're running a bakery to legitimize your dealing.
I'm not a dealer. I'm a mother who happens to distribute illegal products through a sham bakery set up by my ethically questionable CPA.
It's the oldest rule in business. Buy low, sell high. You get it? Sell high. If you ever make up business cards, you could use that.
I don't remember it. Is this sort of like a softer, non-violent Breaking Bad?
Yeah, a lot less violent than Breaking Bad. Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, because she's doing, you know, weed, which, as she explains, was sort of legal at the time. It wasn't as illegal. It doesn't get half as dark as Breaking Bad did in some of the series. But yeah, it's just a lot more fun. It's really beautiful. And again, we're back to Nina and her 99 Balloons. Women with sexy voices, you know, with sort of deep voices. Sounds great. I should rewatch all that. I should binge watch the whole of Weeds again.
Okay, if television isn't your thing and the way that the language hasn't changed, what about podcasts? Have you embraced the sort of the podcast revolution that's going on?
Yeah, in fact, by coincidence, about 2 days ago, I listened to my podcast on Stitcher and I checked how many hours. I think it's 35,000 hours of podcasts, or is it 3,500? I think it's 35. It must be 3,500 of hours of podcasts I've listened to since 2014, since I first started listening to podcasts seriously. So I just devour them. And in one way, it makes me less of a proper Irish citizen, because I used to be so devoted to the FM, to all the news stations, you know, that's how I got my sense of Ireland. Yeah. I just now listen to podcasts, you know, so I know.
Damn you, we'll have to edit this out.
I just now know what the traffic is like in, you know, going to Chicago O'Hare Airport or something. It's crazy.
But what's the attraction for you? Is this the sense of international or what?
Yeah, it's mainly the ones I listen to are sort of those produced podcasts. So the ones which isn't a live chat show, but it's just, because they have so much money, they can like really hone a theme.
Documentaries, really.
Exactly. Yeah, I suppose they're called documentaries. But yeah, exactly. Documentaries. But when someone takes a theme and then can interview people from, exactly, it is a documentary, from all over angles, and then cut them with really clever music and fresh ways. As you said, it's all that thought that is being put into TV programmes, that in Ireland, most of our radio is live, and that's its vibrancy and its brilliance. But then when you have a considered one, they can stay with you.
Okay, pick out a favourite for us.
It's I was going to go for a Radio Lab, but everyone talks about that. The other one is 99% Invisible with Roman Mars. He set up, in fact, a whole podcast platform in the end. But 99% Invisible is about architecture. Now, I have no knowledge of architecture, no particular interest in architecture.
Yeah, and you built your own house, didn't you?
I built my own wreck of a house. If you saw that, you'd know I have no knowledge. You know, my first house, remember, fell down. It was so bad. My second house is a kip.
We just better explain to people that these are things that you made, environmentally friendly, sustainable, self-built.
Yeah, but they're still hovels. Yeah, they from an environmental perspective, they're great. From an engineering perspective, the first one was made of bales of straw. The second is made still of mud and stone and straw and block in the centre of it, and grass on the roof.
Okay, but that takes us away from 99% Invisible by Roman Mars. Tell us about it.
So the concept of that title is that architecture should be 99% invisible. It should enrich our lives, the space around us, but we shouldn't be sort of conscious of it. And so every week he'll take some concept in architecture, like the revolving door, and he'll just make you see it in an entirely different way. Like the revolving door is 8 times more efficient than a swing door, because it cuts out 8% of the wind and the rain and the cold that's coming in than a swing door. It also stops the snow coming in. It stops the dust coming in summer. They're amazingly efficient, but people don't like them.
And traps people if they're not fast enough to get through them. Let's hear a little bit from the podcast.
Because opening a swinging door is like tearing a hole in a building. All that heat or air conditioning leaks out, and the building has to kick into high gear to make up for the temperature and humidity fluctuation. Dan Wasilowski and his team observed a building on the MIT campus that had both revolving doors and swinging doors, and found that the revolving door usage sat at about 25%.
The team realized that In addition to conserving energy and helping the environment, they could also save MIT more than $7,500 annually if everyone just used the revolving door in this one building. And they found they could raise revolving door usage at that building to 60 or 70% with just some simple signage.
Okay, very interesting. That is your podcast choice. Unfortunately, we're out of time, Moncon McGann. Just remind us again that the book is...
It's called 32 Words for Fields.
I hear it's selling brilliantly. It's hard to get at the moment, although they do have copies in Dubray.
Yeah, it's great. Like a book about the Irish language that is like almost sold out in most places. That was unthinkable before COVID. So COVID is doing somebody a good turn.
Moncon McGann, as ever, thank you very much for being with us here on The Last Word of Today FM, being our guest on The Culture Club this evening.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.